man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Does your financial advisor take the time to really listen to you? Is your financial strategy personalized for you and your family? Will your financial advisor be there as your life and financial situation changes? When you work with Edward Jones, they focus on what's important to you. You'll work together and use an established process to create a personalized financial strategy backed by the advice, tools, and resources to help you reach your goals. And they'll partner with you to help your strategy stay on track. Visit EdwardJones.com or stop by the office of Todd Nash in Coralville, Jeff Rudolph, or Scott McGill in Iowa City, or Travis Whitmore in North Liberty. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Member SIPC.
Record. Hello and welcome to the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast here on HawkFanatic.com. Rob Howe joined by Scott Docterman from The Athletic. Monday, March the 13th. Oh, 9:15 a.m. Central Time. Your week and calendar are not mixed up. We are adjusting again this week as we did last week. Obviously, Big Ten tournament start this week. National Wrestling in Tulsa, Oklahoma this week. So plenty of going on, and we wanted to start the week and get a chance to talk before we get to work. So that's why we are here. Scott, where to start? A lot of storylines here. We went through Selection Sunday yesterday and, you know, the typical, this team got robbed, this team shouldn't be in, all that national talk. From a local standpoint, we knew Iowa was in both the men's and women's tournament. It was just a matter of where. Probably some disappointment on both sides. I think the men were hoping for Des Moines. You had said last week you didn't think that was likely. And then the women, certainly, I thought deserved the number one seed. But who do you take off that line? I don't know. I mean, 1-2, Iowa's a 2 seed at home. We'll play Southeastern Louisiana. We got the time of that is Friday, approximately 3 p.m. at Carver. If you don't have your tickets yet and you're listening to this live and on the YouTube feed, you better get at it, because I was on there at 9 o'clock this morning and I'm in row 33. So you may want to get on that quick.
Yeah.
Scott and I will be at Carver for the women's opening rounds, I would assume, unless there's an epic upset in the first round for the Iowa women. And looking forward to it. Scott was there last year when they got upset by Creighton. So a lot of storylines we'll get to here, but your overall thoughts when you saw each bracket come out for Iowa.
Yeah, good morning, Rob. I hope you're feeling better.
5 days is over. The COVID 5-day quarantine is over. I can go to Hy-Vee today, and we need it.
Yeah, you know, isn't it strange, Rob? I mean, compared to 3 years ago at this time, where the world was shutting down and we didn't know what we were going to embark on and how crazy it was, and now it's just kind of like a nasty cold. That's a good thing in this world, especially you've been vaxxed probably, what, 4 times, I think.
However many there have been are in me.
Yeah. I guess starting with the men, because it just took place earlier, I thought a 9 seed or an 8 seed was actually pretty high. I didn't think that they probably deserved that at 19 and 13. And some of the losses that they had, not necessarily Eastern Illinois is one of those trip on the sidewalk moments, but you know, the getting swept by Wisconsin and Nebraska, losing to Penn State, getting beat 2 out of 3 by Ohio State. Those types of games to me kind of suggested that this team was probably more on the 10 line than the 8. But to get an 8, that's probably a pretty good thing for Iowa. And now the location, it is a road trip. I mean, going to Birmingham, Alabama to play Auburn, that is like somebody – it would be like if Iowa was the 9 seed in Des Moines playing Arkansas. I mean, it's really about the same thing. I mean, Birmingham is not next. It's like 2 hours away from Auburn, and there's a sizable amount of players or fans there. Now, as Connor McCaffrey pointed out, and I think that makes a lot of sense, is Alabama is also there. And so Alabama fans will not cheer for Auburn. So kind of like Iowa fans and Iowa State fans will not cheer for one another. So you might get a little bit more of a home crowd, even though they grit their teeth and plug their nose because it's a Big Ten team. They're going against the SEC, but still, it's I think overall it's a great seed for Iowa. They're playing a team that's it contrast in style. No question. Defensive minded. It's going to be, if you can't shoot, you're going to lose and probably lose decisively. If you can, you can win emphatically. So I think there's a lot of advantages. And I would say if you're going to play a number one seed, I mean, Houston's a good team, but Houston's not infallible. I mean, they've got some weaknesses Iowa could exploit if it's playing at a high level, you know, in certain ways. So overall, I think this is about as good as you can get based on the season you had.
Yeah, and you look at it, Scott, overall seed-wise, Iowa was a 32. Iowa was the 32nd. That's pretty they got a lot of, credit for the wins this year. And that was what we were wondering, how the good wins would be measured against the bad losses that you mentioned. And Iowa beat some, I think, eight teams that has 8 wins against tournament teams this year. Is that right? I think I saw that in Weitzel's notes. So, you know, that's a decent amount. And what was Auburn? 36, 35. So 32, 35. I saw the first line that Bet Rivers had was Auburn -1, Iowa +1. So that lets you know right there, this is a coin flip game, and it's an 8-9. It's what you would expect.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So, yeah, that the crowd dynamic will be interesting. How well will Iowa travel? How far of a drive is it to Birmingham?
Just ballparking it, I would probably put it at least 10 hours.
Yeah, that's miserable.
Yeah, I mean, after driving to Nashville, and that was 8, you know, probably. And well, that was a bad weather drive that took, you know, 11 the first time. But yeah, I would say at least 10 is my guess, maybe 11. So
Google estimate is 11 hours and 17 minutes. You were right. So 757 miles.
So in other words, for somebody who always tries to beat the GPS, so it's about 10 and a half hours.
Yes. Yeah. You know?
Unless I've got my unless I got my wife with me, then there's a few more pit stops on the road back. But I don't know. I mean, I could see some fans going, but I don't think a large contingent will go because it's just, you know, it's far. The you know, there's just a lot of probably
it's spring break around here too for the college and for, you know, high schools and. You know, so people have plans.
Yeah. And you also think about it, that there are some people who will go to the women's game instead,
mm-hmm.
you know, who just, you know, you look at Iowa and men's basketball. Sure. They, you know, they could win one. They could even pose a, you know, one of the big upsets of the tournament and beat Houston.
And that's the thing, you win too, you're in Kansas City.
Yeah. And, but then you look and you say the women are a 2 seed, probably the number 5 overall. They've got an opportunity to do something special, and they've had a special year. And that's always the weird part about getting to this point is now, you know, the cliche is you can just wipe the records clean, you know, everybody's starting over again. And that's true to an extent, but yeah, 5 months worth of residue. And it's just more of a, you know, culmination to what you're, your season is. So I don't think there's a lot of expectations. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, last year there was, it was, the trajectory was upward after the Big Ten tournament for the men. 2 years ago, they were a two seed, even though they were, you know, in the bubble there. So, but this year it's just kind of been a disjointed season with some, you know, mostly a roller coaster. So it's hard to say. I'm not saying fans won't cheer for them by any stretch, but just the fact that it's, you know, nobody's going, man, they're going to go to the Final Four this year, where the women, you're thinking that that's a real possibility.
Yeah, the men have made the Sweet 16 twice in the last 34 years. And it's been, what, 23 seasons since are we up to that now? Yeah,
24.
We're getting, this is the,
this will be the 24th. So
yeah, take the COVID out.
Yeah, true. Okay, you're right.
So, yeah, COVID adjusted statistics. we're always gonna have that year, that 2020. But yeah, who knows? I mean, they were hot as heck going into last year, off a Big Ten tournament championship, and fell flat on their face against Richmond. You know, you just never know. You know, we talked about it briefly before we started recording. These are, the NCAA tournament is great for the very reason that it's unpredictable in a lot of ways, especially early. Mm-hmm. So once you get on there, you know, I think the number one seed has won the last five. So as you get on, the upsets become a little bit, you don't see a lot of St. Peter's. It happens, but it's not, these are when they happen, getting to that Sweet 16. And I'm with you. I think this is, if you were to said, all right, here's the, you get it, you get to choose which number one seed you have to face in the second round. I think Iowa, not publicly, but I think they would have picked Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because Alabama has just incredible athletes.
Yeah.
They would be a very difficult team. So Maryland, good luck to you if you pass West Virginia. you know, Kansas and Des Moines would be interesting, but Kansas, you know, is going to bring a lot of fans too. And, you know, it might be a mix. If they were to play Kansas, it might be 50-50 in Des Moines. But I think in that situation, if you're Kansas, you kind of understand who you're facing, you know, that it's okay, we're kind of on the road here. We know we're playing a pretty good team, a pretty good program from a major conference. And so the mental aspect, you're not going to surprise them. But with Houston being in Alabama, you just don't know what they're going to think. And then with Marcus Sasser, you know, who's been injured, and I don't know how, you know, he didn't play, I think, this weekend. And
yeah, he went out, I think, in the semis and did not play in the final, and they got pounded by Memphis.
Yeah. So I kind of wonder, you know, what'll end up happening there. So, you know, and I watched the Northern Kentucky game because I had to do like 18 capsules for our regional previews. And oh my God, I don't ever want to have to do that again. you know, I split half the Big Ten. I did the ACC, and then I did about six or seven one bid conferences. And so it was like, oh, but, you know, and I'm not, basketball is okay with me, but it's, you know, like if you were to ask me there are three big events that all happen this single weekend, going in today. The Oscars are clearly third. I could not care less about the Oscars.
We had them on last night, but it was very casually looking while my family was watching and I was working on my laptop. But yeah. I wanted to be present, you know, be a good family member. So I sat on the couch with my laptop and didn't really pay much attention to what was going on.
If I was, if my family cared, then I would probably do the same thing. That would be the most, but I don't see any of those movies except
All's I don't Quiet. Either.
All's Quiet on the Western Front. I did watch that.
Did you see that? Okay.
That was
you didn't see the Top Gun?
Not yet. Not till it comes to one of my 15 different apps that I have here.
I don't think I saw any of the movies that were nominated, to be honest with you, now that I think about it. Not that I could name them all, but I don't go to the movies. I haven't been in the movie theater in a long time. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, I went to 80 for Brady. That was fun. But number two for me would be, and I know this will probably be like, what are you thinking? It is probably the Selection Sunday part of it. I like it and I get into it. Don't get me wrong. But number one for me is definitely free agent frenzy in the NFL. I am just, on pins and needles. And I know this could be happy Aaron Rodgers day for you and your Jets. So we'll see what happens there. But no, so, I mean, of all the three, that's kind of how I shape it up. And I went to Carver yesterday for both the men's and women's pressers. And, it was really a different feel between the two. I thought it was really fascinating. The men were, the players were just kind of matter of fact. Fran was incredibly monotone, which is typical for this time of year. And it's always kind of baffled me, and it's just, I don't know if it's a personality or if he just thinks we're a bunch of idiots and doesn't want to, I guess we'll talk about this. And then the women were very excited, as to be expected. There was a little bit of a, factor when they didn't get the number one. And even Lisa Bluter did that, started laughing, and which is funny. But I think overall they were fine with what was going on. In fact, they're going to play at home for two games. They couldn't ask for more. So, and they invited people to come in and watch it with them. The men did it privately as always. So it was just two different moods, I thought.
Yeah, and really that's what I wrote about for today for my column was basically this time of year, it's always judgment time. You're judged really what you do in the big tournament. The women have back-to-back Big Ten tournament championships, great accomplishment. But we talked about it last week, Scott. This is the proving ground. What is your legacy? And from the women's perspective, and we'll talk more about the women's matchups here too as we get along, but just from an overall overarching viewpoint, the women have the game's best player, the best player in the country. So she's playing for her legacy. The two players in Iowa history who have their numbers retired, Michelle Edwards, Megan Gustafson, both led their teams to Elite Eights. So that's kind of a measuring stick for her. She's going to be compared to other really good, some of the best players that have ever played the game. This is kind of where did she get her team when she was at Iowa? How far did her team go? So that's a measuring stick for her. For Cezano and for Warnock, this is their last ride. Cezano's been, she's had an incredible career, but, how far can she go? What's her legacy? And then, for Lisa Bluter, she's been a coach for a long time. Can she get a team to the Final Four? She's the winningest coach, program history. So there's a lot there legacy wise. And then I'll switch quickly to the men and let you go. We kind of have outlined for them, two Sweet 16s in 34 years, 23 years since the last one. Fair or not, Scott, that's the albatross they carry. Can this program finally break through and get to the second weekend again? And that's really what it'll be judged by.
Right. It was funny when my old days, when I did the went home and away with Iowa basketball, Morehouse would say that Iowa has great history, but not great tradition. And that's kind of what's been building in men's basketball for the last generation and a half. Because as you said,
McCaffrey was not quite a year old the last time they made the Sweet 16, and he'll be 25 in June.
Exactly. I mean, my son will be 24 in May, and he was not born when they went to the last Sweet 16. And before that, it was, 88? So,
yeah.
You said two in 34 years. Really, it's, one in 34 years, because since then they've only been to that one. And that was kind of like if this year, if they made it, just kind of it was a good year. They got hot and they beat the right team at the right time. And then they got into the tournament. So there were some moments where I think there are some parallels with this team and that 99 team, but they've had opportunities and we know that, that over Fran's career that, the 14 team, had that, lost 7 out of 8 but it was ranked 10th in the country at one point. There were a lot of issues. I don't think, like with Patrick getting cancer and stuff like that, that one's really not a fair one to kind of chide him. But, 16, they're ranked as high as third. They started off like 10-1 in the
14 was Dayton, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
In 16 was when they started off 10-1 in the Big Ten and ended up 12-6 and then split their tournament games. They won on the buzzer in overtime against Temple and then got crushed by Villanova. That was one where you're like, okay, you know, it's one thing to lose to the champ, which was Villanova, but it's another thing to have to play them at all in when that year was a Des Moines year and that year was also a St. Louis year. And you had, I think it was Wisconsin, ended up in St. Louis. And all he had to do was beat Wisconsin once and near probably in St. Louis instead as a 7 seed. And they got to the Sweet 16. And then you look at the last couple of years. 2 years ago, they were a 2 seed and they played Oregon and they got, you know, mopped there. And then last year, entering as hot as they ever have, they finally won the Big Ten tournament again and then could not do anything offensively that resembled what they looked like all year long and then lose in the first round. So there's a lot of disappointment and it's just been perpetual now. And we could talk what Iowa was like before Fran, but he's been here 13 years now.
You know, Tom Davis, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is this Fran's 12th year?
This is his 13th.
Okay. So he matched Tom yeah. Davis, right? They both. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so his tenure is as long as Tom Davis. And now, granted, they both entered differently.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you have the greatest collection of Iowa players to start your career, and then you have arguably, you know, the least talented, other than Matt Gaetans at that point. But that said, you know, they've been very parallel throughout. And I think you wonder, you know, there was a push, you do remember it. You were at the Press Citizen at that time. There seemed to be such a strong push to get change that, you know, they were settling, you know, we hear it sometimes in football too, but
the next level,
you're right.
Getting to the next level that was kind of the battle cry when they wanted when Bowlesby decided to cut Tom Davis loose.
Yeah. And so at this point, what happens if they go one, you know, the one and done, or even if they win their first game and get blown out by Houston, which is a strong possibility, I would think. I mean, you know, they could win, but
is it a yawn? Yeah, we've seen that.
Yep. But does it get to the point, and then you start to look at who's leaving? Chris Murray will go to the draft. Philip Robracho will probably go to Europe. Can they get in the portal and get people to do that? I mean, Connor McCaffrey has been a really good player for them. I think I wouldn't necessarily think that the newcomers will come in and, you know, be all conference players right away and replace Chris Murray and Philip Robracha in that regard. So next year could be a tough year, or at least a, you know, middling year. And so then at that point, what's kind of the prospects for Iowa? Does apathy settle in? I think that's a real possibility with this program.
Has it already settled in? I mean, some of the crowds this year were not good.
Yeah. They did have sellouts towards the end.
Yeah, they did at the end. Mm-hmm. They did for sure.
But, you know, I wonder, you know, I guess talking to fans as often as we do that, you know, they want to see greatness, but I don't know that they expect it. And that's kind of a dangerous spot because let's say the trajectory is that this year, let's give them the, you know, they hold seed. They win by 4 points against Auburn, and then they lose by 10 to Houston at that point. And then you look at who's all leaving. It seems a real possibility that there'd be a step back. How will fans react? You know, in the face of the women's team is completely surging in that direction. There is so much energy and interest with the women, whereas with the men it's almost like move on. I don't know, that's scary.
Yeah, it certainly is. And you know, we've gotten to this point again of here we are, we're looking at the bracket and we're going, can this team get the gorilla off? Can this team get the gorilla off the program's back? Because that's really what it is. Every team each year, and it's, you know this, Scott, because you've interacted with them through the years. Iowa basketball fans are really passionate, man. They love it, and they are so hungry for success. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it's a tired cliche, but that Lucy in the football with Charlie Brown, and you're just like, I don't want to get hurt again. I've got all these scars from the years from the Northwestern State and, or, you know, the Oregon game and Richmond last year and the overtime loss to Tennessee and, you know, go on and on through the years here so, during this drought. And it's just, I don't want to get hurt. want to get hurt in this relationship again. And that's why I think there's just, people kind of are just taking a wait and see, and that's probably the smart approach.
Yeah. And because they want to, they're scared to get hurt. You're absolutely right. There just seems to be a hedging on embracing this team. And that's really program wide in so many different ways. It's football going 6-0 and being ranked second in the country and kind of when is the other shoe going to drop? Well, it did, you know, you know, it's, you know, or go to the Big Ten championship game and the first time and have an excruciating loss and then get blown out in the Rose Bowl. And the women's team's having some good teams, having the player of the year and not doing it either, but it's worse in basketball. It's like there have been a lot of gut punches in football, but these are like below the gut punches in basketball. I wrote it when I was with the Gazette, I think it was in the 2016 tournament. I said, the higher they fly, the harder they hit the ground. And when they fall and you look at everything from, and we've heard all these stories, even if we are too young, you know, the Ronnie Lester in 1980, I remember distinctly the 87 season, you know, and how good they were and deep they were. And then, you know, have a 20-point lead on UNLV and then lose. And, you know, even old timers with the 1970 team that still has the Big Ten record for average points per game at 102.9. How incredible is that? That'll never be broken. And yet to lose by Pembroke Burroughs tip in at the buzzer. And then even before that, playing Bill Russell in the NCAA finals and stuff. So all this is like there's a callus there.
A lot of scar tissue.
Yeah.
It's just built up.
And so it's really kind of difficult. And the problem that Fran faces now is that they were close enough to break through, I think, the last couple of years. That, you know, certainly the last two, when they had Garza, you know, they had Garza and Keegan Murray, two first-team All-Americans, and they still get rolled by Oregon. You know, Garza scores 36 points, and they – you know, it's kind of reminds me of Blazing Saddles, you know, where they, you know, when the bad guys are coming after them and then they're in the desert, they set up the toll booth and we need to go get a shitload of dimes. That's what they needed to do with the guards that day, you know, because Oregon's guards just did whatever the hell they wanted to do. And then last year to have such a high and then a low, that was just like 2006. It's just, it's perpetual. And so, you know, people protect themselves against that kind of hurt. And this is that year where if they do get to the Sweet 16, there'll be a lot of conflicted feelings because there wasn't the buildup of the excitement like there is with women. And then of course there's the, you know, if they actually get that far and that they could be playing Indiana again,
Drake,
you know, Drake
in Iowa and Kansas City.
Wow. And then have Iowa State versus Penn State in the other game. Oh,
yeah.
Imagine that if they had to play Drake in the Sweet 16 and Iowa State in the Elite Eight.
Better stock up on the beer, KC.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine Kansas City?
KC better get ready for that.
Oh,
or not.
Yeah, I think it might, you know, it might end up being like Houston and Texas and you know, maybe Iowa State, who knows, Xavier, something. But I think they would love to have Iowa and Iowa State simply from a, you know, the fans would be insane on the plaza, but and the light district. But no, I don't know. I'm rambling, but it's still it would be a weird scenario. If they got past it, I think there would be a lot of excitement, but it would be tempered almost like there wasn't enough emotional buildup through the course of the year to really take advantage of it and celebrate it.
Yes. And we will talk more after the season kind of about what, I don't want to say the future of this program, but kind of we saw it with football this after the season with the transfer portal. I think we're going to see something, maybe not. I don't think Iowa basketball is going to get that much volume, but it's all relative roster size, right? Iowa's probably going to get into the portal and there will be a player or two from the portal. We'll talk kind of about how that shakes out and needs and some names. I've seen some names floated out there, but we'll table that till after the season. Let's take a break now, and we'll come back, talk a little bit more about Auburn, give people a little bit of preview of what they're about, and then get into the women's bracket and kind of what how things shape up for the women as well. Want to let folks know that support for this podcast and all podcasts here on Hawk Fanatic come from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That's sui.org. Thank you to Systems Unlimited. Let's hear from a few more sponsors, and Scott and I will be back on the other side. Hang in there.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
Oriza Asian Cuisine and Bar is celebrating its fifth year anniversary. Enjoy Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, and Korean all combined into one menu. Visit 5 Sturgis Corner Drive next to Staples in Iowa City. Open 11 to 10 every day, 365 days a year, or visit online at arizaic.com.
And we are back. Thank you for hanging in there. Thank you to our sponsors. Scott, I pulled up the KenPom. Always interested to look at his numbers and metrics. If you look at adjusted offense, adjusted defense, Iowa is number 3 nationally in adjusted offense, number 167 in adjusted defense. Auburn is 48 in adjusted offense, 29 in adjusted defense. So you look at the KenPom numbers, and as you said, a contrast in styles. Auburn's leading scorer, I believe, is 6'10 or 6'11. Mm-hmm. They've got some size, which with Iowa's roster is always something to keep an eye on. Common opponents, look through that a little bit. Northwestern, common opponent, would 1-point win? 1-point win for Auburn back in November 23rd Cancun.
In Cancun, it was 43-42.
A Licklider special.
Yes. So it was Northwestern playing a little bit down and them playing an incredible defensive game. But
I'm sorry I missed that one.
Yeah, you know, that was over Thanksgiving break area. So
I saw that years ago when Michigan State came to Carver.
I've seen a few, unfortunately, and, you know, it's we're 2 days short of the 13th anniversary of Happy Licklider Gone Day. But
Scott was roaming the offices over in Carver Hawkeye Arena,
I was standing outside his office that morning. I heard that it was going to happen at 9 a.m. and I was out there before he was. And 8 minutes later, hey, Todd, and he just kept walking. So I knew something was up there. you know, here's some of the things with, you know, with Auburn, as you mentioned, John Broomy, I think is how you pronounce it. He was the Ohio Valley Conference Defensive Player of the Year last year and then transferred in, and he's 6'10", sophomore, 14 points, 8.4 rebounds per game, 2.3 blocks, just a very tough, tenacious defender in the post, and they kind of play that style throughout, which is why they're as high as they are in defensive efficiency. You know, they've had some, you know, tough losses, I would say. You know, the Alabama loss in overtime at the end of the year was difficult for them, you know, 90-85. Bruce Pearl kind of got testy after that one about the officiating. So we got two guys who love the officials. That's going to go well. and then you have, you know, they beat Tennessee, you know, which is like the complete net darling. I don't know that they left the top five all year in the net.
I'm not referencing the net on this podcast. Yeah. I'm done with the net.
Okay, good.
But you can.
Okay. It's like, it's like the selection committee with these college football playoff, and that's how we'll do it. We're like, all right, once it's done, it's done.
I will say that Rutgers should have been in. That was bull.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was surprised. You know, when it came down the stretch, I was like, wait a minute, no Rutgers. I thought Rutgers would be in Dayton or something like that.
Yeah.
I think Penn State knocked them out. You know, but either way, you know, I would just say that overall, you know, they blew out Kentucky. They beat, you know, blew out Missouri. They got blown out by Kentucky. So they've got a resume that's really similar. Their Tennessee game was 46-43 that they lost. So this is a team that's, you know, capable of really clamping you down. And if Iowa's road woes continue shooting the basketball, especially from three, this could be a very difficult game because they could be out rebounded, and then they'll probably, you know, certainly be out physical depending on the way the game is officiated.
Exactly. That was the point I was going to make. You talked about the officiating, and that's so important. How is this game going to be called? You saw the Iowa's last two games this season, Nebraska, Ohio State, those teams got their pace against Iowa. They slowed Iowa down. I'm wondering, Scott, if Iowa needs to force tempo here, press, do things to get the game sped up a little bit rather than allowing it to come to them being passive. Be interesting to see what the approach here is in this one, because it's obvious Auburn's going to want to slow this down and make it a rock fight, and that's not good for Iowa.
It's never been good, and it's really not good now. You know, that there have been a few years there where they could play at that pace. I think when Garza was there, they could.
The Woodbury, you know, teams could a little bit.
Yeah, when you had Woodbury and Utah and Aaron White, you could play that style and throw down and be all right, but not this team. I mean, and Rabracha is so instrumental to this team in so many different ways. I mean, I think he's the MVP for this team. I think the way he's played and performed this year, they would not be anywhere near where they'd be. And it's not just about scoring. It's just about attention. It's about fighting in the post and doing all those things. And he's going to face a guy that's pretty damn good. And it could be an accidental, again, officiating. He gets two quick fouls. They're dead in the water.
Touch foul here and there, something on a hedge.
Yeah.
You know, you hedge out and boom, the guard cause, you know, those are the things you really have to be careful of.
Exactly. So they're going to have to play that way. But I agree with you emphatically that getting into the press after a make is going to be critical for them to force the action at their pace and get into a transitional opportunity, because then they're good. Then they are capable. If they're in transition a lot of the game, they are very capable of beating, you know, hell, everybody, you know, because if Purdue's a one, and they are, then you look at this team and go, yeah, I think there's some opportunities here to go somewhere. But if they don't, and you get a touch foul, if they're passive, if they continue to shoot less than 30% from three on the road, like they did the other day, then it's going to be a really tough game. And you've got fans that will cheer. There'll be more passionate fans for Auburn, and it is a different session. So it's not like, you know, the Alabama fans will want to pay for four games, maybe just two, you know? So I think that, but this team's wired differently, as we've seen. You know, the way they played in Indiana gives me some curiosity that they could go on the road, kind of a us versus the world mentality and do something, but still it's, it could be a difficult, it could be a grind. And if it is, it could be a tough game for Iowa.
It's in there. That's kind of then the Jekyll and Hyde nature of this team, where, again, we've been over it, you know, every podcast, the ugly losses and the impressive wins and just playing well against, I mean, they played well against Purdue, or at least kept the game close. The last 2 years they've been able to do that against good Purdue teams. So Auburn does have balance. I noticed that just going through statistics. I haven't watched any games yet. I'll probably go back and try to skim through some games of theirs this week. But four players in double figures, averaging scoring in double figures. So they spread it out a little bit. They go deep, play a lot of guys, yeah. A lot of minutes spread out throughout their roster. I didn't look – rebounding wise, that's something that's hurt Iowa at times this year. Not sure how good Auburn is as a rebounding team. Any insight on that, Scott? Sorry, I had to hit you with that.
Oh yeah, and I made sure before this to print off the box or the rundown. It's rebounding wise, it's even. The one thing I would go to, and here's probably the best key to them, and I think, and they're both really comparable in this. Rebound margin is more important to me than rebounds.
Yes.
Because it's how you stack up in those games, because sometimes you miss a lot, sometimes you don't. And they're plus 1.2, Iowa's plus 1.8. So that's pretty even, you know, and it just kind of depends on the game and the style and how you miss those shots. But this one's a tough one to read, because I could, and this is why people sometimes who have no idea what to expect in tournaments, you know, win brackets.
That's why people who pick mascots.
Yes. I know. It's like, oh yeah, I know. I always use this and my wife gets mad now, but, you know, back in the day, you know, she was like, oh, my name's Meredith and, Maryland. That sounds like Meredith. So I'll go with them. And then they had, you know, then they went and Juan Dixon and those guys, and they beat Kansas.
Funny you say that, and maybe that's like the kindred spirit thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we were at the Press Citizen at the time, but I was in a pool with Catherine, and she picked Maryland as well and won that pool that same year. That's funny.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that was the turtle.
Yeah, it must have been, you know, but
it's how just, can you not like a turtle?
Yeah, I mean,
you never hear people speak ill of turtles,
right? You know, I mean, hawks, you know, getting, you know, well, I guess they get rid of barn rats, so good for them. But you know, the gophers, you know, all you know, gophers, I can tell you from experience, I don't like them. But in real life,
I've never come across a gopher. Have you had some situations with gophers? I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I wish. I'm not going to, you know, tell people exactly what happened to them when I caught them, but I will say that they did ruin parts of my backyard.
Oh no! I'm hearing the Caddyshack theme song now.
Yeah, there was no blowing up. By the way, that was, to me, is still the commercial of the Super Bowl when you know, what's his name, Brian. Gosh darn it. But anyway, yeah, he played Ted Knight's character, Judge Smales, in that commercial over the Super Bowl. But anyway, yeah. Maryland, back it up here. That's why with this matchup, I could see so many things here going on that it's like, how do you pick it? I mean, can you pick it? So it's going to be a couple possessions to me is probably what's going to happen. If there's a blowout, I think Iowa gets it. Just because of their transition opportunities. And if they shoot the ball well, they'll be tough for Auburn to stop. But if Iowa struggles shooting the ball and the pace is not right, then that's when it could be a really difficult grind for Iowa. And so, I don't know, flip a coin, I guess.
Toss-up game. I looked somebody at Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, somebody in their mathematics department, did an updated percentage of reaching the Sweet 16 by seed. And I believe the 8 seed is about 10%. Mm. So if you're looking at Iowa's chances of breaking the drought, you got about a 10% chance. So,
you know, and you look at this bracket though, Rob, I mean, I've been watching this especially the last month. And I'm telling you what, there is not a team in this tournament that can't be beat. There's not one.
No.
You know, this is, you could call it parity, you could call it mediocrity, whatever you want to call it. But I'm looking at, you know, I mean, Kansas got beat by 20. Houston got blew out. Alabama is playing well now, but, you know, Oklahoma, the worst team in the Big 12, beat it by 20-some points. Purdue has lost some games. You know, and then you go to the next, you know, the twos aren't, you know, again, Marquette. Does that really scare you?
I mean, Penn State pushed Purdue yesterday.
Yeah.
In that championship game.
Here's a funny anecdote. With 5:19 left, they were down like, I don't know, 14, 15 points. And I, that was the last capsule I had to do for our regional preview.
Of course.
And so I'm like, and then it was like 4:15 ish or whatever. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to Carver, and I sent it in and I said, I will happily update this if the outcome changes. I got there into the press room where the TV was on with 3.3 seconds left. Penn State had the ball down too. I'm like, oh my God, really? And then, you know, and then of course I think it was a travel, you know, which killed
me. Yeah, that was not what was drawn up.
No.
By Micah Shrewsbury in the huddle.
That's kind of like getting sacked on a Hail Mary, you know, you're like, come on, you know, but anyway, you know, you look at all these teams and I'm like, I could see anything happening this year. You know, are you going to pick chalk seeds? Good luck. You know, maybe you'll get farther just simply because there's going to be so much chaos, but
I think part of the interesting dynamic now, Scott, is what we talked about earlier with, transfer portal, teams that use that, go that route to build a roster or use freshmen. Like you look at a team like Duke that's got really good freshmen that are, it's finally gelling now that the season's gone on. Ohio State played its best basketball really in the Big Ten tournament once those freshmen and transfers kind of gelled together. So that's really unpredictable. Which of those teams may come together and make a run now?
Right. Well, Duke to me is one, as you said, you know, because I wrote their capsule, I paid no attention to them, and they were they are one that's really ascending, no question. And they played really well this weekend and won the ACC, and they're a 5 seed. And I'm like, oh, they're underseeded, and they could beat Tennessee without question. Now, Oral Roberts is not an easy matchup
in
the first round. That might be more difficult than playing Tennessee. And then if they play the Sweet 16 against Purdue, again, I've seen better Purdue teams, you know, in recent years than this one that weren't a number one seed, that were more capable. I mean, I'm not saying
and they rely so much on Edie.
Yes.
I mean, if he were to get in foul trouble or something, they rely so much on him.
Right. I mean, they don't have Jaden Ivey and they don't have, you know, Carson Edwards. I mean, some of those players, those guards that used to
freshman just, point guard.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. You know, being in Columbus, I think they'll probably win two, but Memphis could be a tough matchup for them.
Yeah.
Or Florida Atlantic, for that matter. I mean, they were kind of underseeded, you know, I thought, you know, being a 9. You know, you look around, UCLA, they're just preliminarily, without getting too much into it, they're the team I think is going to win it. I think they're pretty good. Kansas, you know. So you look at all this stuff and you're like, anybody could beat anybody. It could be a very chaotic tournament bracket. So why can't Iowa do that? I don't see any reason why they can't. I can see a lot of reasons why they can't advance very far, but still, why not? It'd be a fun little couple of week period if they do it.
So did I hear that correctly? You've got UCLA winning it all?
That's, yeah. We had to have something in by 10 o'clock last night. And I'm like, I don't know, this is a tough year. And so I think, and now this is not my bracket yet, you know, for the money, but I think.
So what you're telling folks is do not take it to the bank.
No, I wouldn't do that. Maybe for a dollar or something. I think I went Alabama, Texas, UCLA and Duke. You know,
Gotten through mine yet. My family was feverishly filling out their brackets last night, but I have not gotten a chance to do that yet. I'll take a closer look today, but I like UCLA, I like you. I like Duke, which means those teams will probably get upset early.
Yeah. Northwestern will beat UCLA and the, you know, is a prelude to a great Big Ten rivalry in a couple of years. And
Interesting. Well, let's finish up the men's discussion on that, Scott. A lot of 7, 8, 9, 10-ish Big Ten. You know, we wondered with the parity in the Big Ten and that jam in the middle of the conference this year, how things would shake out in terms of NCAA tournament seeds. A lot of these teams have uphill battles.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they're all going to be playing that second-round game against a supposed elite team. And when you're looking at the sevens include Northwestern and Michigan State, the eights include Maryland and Iowa, the nines include Illinois. So you've got, and then 10, you got Penn State. So yeah, they're all jammed together. And then USC, you know, cause you can count them now, I suppose, but
yes, yeah. UCLA.
Yeah. And then, well, UCLA, hey, we got a two there.
Go Big Ten.
B1G. So, you know, there's a ton there. There's six teams in between 7 and 10. So that's,
Where we create this narrative, right? Like last year, Big Ten had all high seeds and fell flat, for lack of a better term. Maybe this year with these middling seeds, maybe somebody makes a run. Maybe a couple teams make a run into that second weekend.
You know what? If there was a team that I think has a good chance of that, it's probably Michigan State.
Yeah.
Because they're playing USC. I don't see any reason why they can't win that game. Then they'd play Marquette in Columbus. You know what? This is not the same Michigan State teams that we'd seen over the past either, but they still have a Hall of Fame coach and
veteran guards.
Yeah, they're still okay. And then if they get in the Sweet 16, they're playing Kansas State or Kentucky, largely one of those two teams. They can't, you know, you can't tell me they can't beat them. And then at the end, you know, Duke or Purdue or Tennessee or somebody like that, then, you know, maybe they lose there. But I think they're probably got the best out of that bunch. Iowa is, you know, not to be too provincial, but Iowa beats Auburn and then goes and plays its game and beats Houston. The Sweet 16 could be against their best friends, the Indiana Hoosiers, or Drake, as you said, you know, that would be something, or Miami Hurricanes. I don't know. There's so much to talk about here, and I don't know that I know enough to, to, you know, that I could predict any of this. But I tell you what, if there's one thing I'll add, and then I'll be quiet on this, is if I was devising the tournament, I would make one flip and one flip only. I would put Illinois as the eight against Auburn, so Bruce Pearl can play the Illini. That's always
I like it.
And then Iowa in Des Moines against Arkansas. So the Arkansas Razorbacks against Iowa, but that way you're in Des Moines.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I was hoping for Des Moines, but I wasn't counting on it.
No. Not with Jamie Pollard on the, on the committee.
All right, let's take one more break here, hear from a few more sponsors, and Scott and I will be back on the other side, and we will dive into the women's bracket a little bit and see how it shapes up for the Hawkeyes.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deary Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience, the kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deary, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
And we are back. Thank you to our sponsors bringing you these podcasts, allowing us to bring you these podcasts for free every week. Appreciate their support on you guys for listening. Please check sponsors out. We would appreciate that. Scott, looking at this one, we now, as we said, have a times for those games on Friday. The first game is going to be interesting. And if you've got women's tickets, you have to pay for it anyway.
Yeah.
So go over and watch 7th seeded Florida State against 10th seeded Georgia, an ACC SEC matchup. What time is that tip? 12:30?
12:30, yeah. It's the curtain raiser to Iowa and Southeast Louisiana. So I don't know much about those two teams yet. I need to look at, you know, be more in tune with them. But, I mean, on the surface, it looks like a really good matchup. I mean, two big leagues and, you know, two teams that, you know, I think the – is it the Georgia coach who played at Iowa, Kitty Abrahamson?
You might be right. I think that might be correct.
Yeah.
I don't know much – as you, I don't know much about these two squads
so, yet. Yeah, and we'll know enough just to pretend we know something. You know, that's what I try to do.
I know both have a good history.
Yeah, right. So, you know, that's a good – it's an interesting matchup, if nothing else, you know, of teams that have, you know, good histories. And then Iowa, Southeast Louisiana. This is on the surface of it, you know what a 215 matchup means. But this is a team that, you know, won its league, the Southland. It also won its league tournament. And it had you know, some pretty good teams. They had a tournament MVP and a selection. And then they just also had several all Southland players and the all Southland head coach. So, you know, this is a team that's probably got some veterans to it without really, again, pouring over too much of its roster, but it's one that I'm sure is excited about the opportunity to play in front of a full crowd and play against the best player in the country. And it's just going to be, you know, and with that means that Iowa will have to play somewhat patient, at least a little bit early, and then allow its athletic ability and its, you know, discipline and everything to work for it. And then that's when you blow them out. But you know, but the thing is with Iowa against teams like this, you just kind of withstand the early, you know, heavy dose of what they're going to pull at you, be disciplined, and then pull away in the second quarter and beyond.
Looking at some teams that Southeastern Louisiana has played this year, Scott, non-conference wise, one at Utah State, lost 99-62 at Utah, but this one stuck out to me. And again, this is from the end of November, lost by 8 at LSU.
Yeah. You're right. That one is a big one. And at 10, you know, 10 at Alabama. So, but LSU, I mean, as good as they are, they're one of number 3 seeds. So, you know, that's it. Okay. And both now the sessions are sold out officially.
The women's basketball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good thing I got in before we started recording.
73 minutes. We got a press release from when they're official.
Well, sorry, folks. If you didn't get in, you're going to have to go to the secondary market.
Yeah. Sorry, folks.
Parks and I'm not selling mine.
Yeah. Park's closed, folks. But you know, the fact that they went on the road, now that's one of those, it's kind of like you and I play in Iowa, or you know, Drake played Iowa really tough too, and you know, winning overtime in state games for teams punching up, it's a big deal. And so how much of that was LSU being disinterested, how much of it was Southeast Louisiana playing its best game of the year? Still, you got to be prepared for that because if they're capable, if Iowa, you know, and Iowa's had its games where it hasn't played real well. So, you know, I think overall, you just got to be careful there.
Yeah, no question. You want to make sure you do not get, you want to get out to a good start and kind of just bury them early and take away any thoughts of, you know, a potential upset. The leading scorer is Haley Garantano at 12-4. Alexis Horn at 12 points. Those are the only two players scoring in double figures this season. So, again, similar to the men, Scott, I think this is a team that's going to want to slow the pace of Iowa. Good luck with that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can talk about the men and that the possibilities of that. You're not going to do that with the women. You know, they're going to play their pace, and you're just going to have to keep up. And that's, you know, the one thing that could hurt Iowa to extent early. I don't think they're going to lose. I think they're going to win decisively, probably 20-plus points. I think I'm being fair there. But I think two things that they – and they're self-inflicted that could hurt them early. And that number one would be if they are – if there's a lot of turnovers – and if they quick shoot the ball, and have a lot of misses early. It's like they get in transition, they pull up for three and they miss, and then, you know, and then they get the ball back and they get it stolen or they throw it out away and play really sloppy. That I think you could keep them in the game for a little while. If I'm Iowa, don't do that. You know, just say, let's play our game, but let's be disciplined at least early on. And then you get into the flow of the game and you're up 10 and you want to quick shoot the ball and Caitlin Clark pulls up from the logo and drains a three. Good. You know, but maybe avoid it for the first couple minutes of the game just so you can, you know, impose your will. Cause I think if Iowa plays disciplined and smart, this is a game that could end up 105 to 68.
Yeah, no doubt. And you want to, you don't want to take anything for granted and, you know, rest your players and that get into that mode. But an easy first round game can certainly be beneficial in such a long grind of a tournament. And, you know, and certainly capable teams in that second game. We saw last year, Creighton was a 10, and was able to benefit from the way the game was called and got its style and its pace of play. And you figure Florida State or Georgia is going to want to muck it up a little bit if it gets Iowa, either one gets Iowa. You look at it, and from a Florida State perspective, I was looking, Scott, played Purdue in November and Wisconsin the first day of December, beat Purdue by a point, beat Wisconsin by five. And those are teams that Iowa handled pretty easily. So that bodes well. Again, different matchups, you know, you can't, oh, it's not a direct comparison. Georgia also played Wisconsin and beat Wisconsin by eight in the Virgin Islands. So again, two seeds should come out of this and make it to the second weekend. You look at Iowa, Scott, and you look at the bracket here, above them, the three seed is Duke.
Yeah.
The six seed's Colorado. Then you've got Middle Tennessee State in there and Iona. Would have been good if Iona and Iowa played. Everybody was rooting for that. But
yeah, you know,
chance to get Duke in that regional semifinal. And then obviously Stanford is at the top of that bracket. Some other teams in there. Louisville is a five. Drake is the 12. Texas, which lost to Iowa State in the women's Big 12 championship game, is the four seed in there. So, you know, not an impossible task to make the Final Four. I certainly think that is a The Elite Eight is certainly a reasonable goal. And I wrote in my column, if you make the Sweet 16, that's good. I think Iowa's made it, you know, eight, nine times. I can't remember. I don't have it at the top of my head. But eight or nine times, I think, in program history to the Sweet 16. So anytime you make the Sweet 16 in this tournament, that should be looked upon fondly.
Yeah, but I also would think, you know, there's no way to stop your dreams from beyond that right now. I think when you have a number two seed by chalk, you're expected to go to the regional finals. And it's in Seattle, which is interesting in its own right to be that far away. But, you know,
what are the other regional areas?
There's just two.
Oh, so that's right. Yeah. Why are they doing that?
They feel like it saves, I'm sure, you know, they were not going to mention this, but saves on expenses.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
You can have a one site, you can have four teams and two. And or
what's the other one?
Greenville, South Carolina. Or
neither one's close really for Iowa fans.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like they had one in St. Louis or someplace. Like
I'd that. Rather go to Seattle, yeah. But I'm sure there are other people that would rather go to Carolina.
Mm. I went to Seattle in 15 when the Iowa men played there, and you and I men played there too.
Yep. I was there as well. I enjoyed the city.
Yeah, it was a good city. Did you go to the pop culture museum while you were there?
I did not. I went to Jimi Hendrix gravesite though.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Took the bus out there, spent afternoon out there. It was, It was a very moving experience. Big Jimi Hendrix fan.
Okay. I went to the Pop Culture Museum of Seattle, which was awesome. It was awesome is the way I describe it. And I'm kind of, you know, a grunge guy, but also they had a lot of stuff with Jimi Hendrix and you know, and then also they had this sound room. It was incredible where you could feel what it's like to try to call plays at the Seattle Football Stadium as an opposing quarterback.
That's cool.
And you're talking about 100 whatever decibels, 30 decibels or whatever it is. And you can't hear yourself yell. It's incredible. So anyway, if anybody goes there, I would recommend that. It's not that far from the Space Needle. So,
and did you go up in the Space Needle?
I just went to it. I didn't go up in it.
So did I. Yeah. I was walked by, but did not venture up into the needle.
Mm-hmm. I was, you know, not only with Iowa there, but I was working for the Gazette at the time and also doing some UNI work. That was a pretty busy tournament, you know, and Halas and I were both there. And so we were like, both of us had to write from both games. And it was like back to back. That can be a real chore, especially the second day, because they're really late games.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, because that's what happens, you know, so Sacramento, it's a good thing Iowa's not there, you know, but
yeah.
But no, Seattle's cool. I'm glad they're going there. You know, chances are they'll probably play Duke and then probably Stanford. You know, and then if they survive that, then they'll be playing, you know, probably South Carolina in the Final Four. And so that, to me, that's one that, you know, they're not going to be favored in.
You know, I haven't talked to many women's basketball fans. I don't know what their expectations are for this team. I think everybody has that memory of how it ended last year. Mm-hmm. So I think probably there is a little bit of caution knowing that anything can happen. But I'm with you. I think get to that second weekend, you exhale and say, all right, we made it to the second weekend. Let's go from here. But I think it's that line between the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Sweet 16 had, you know, go out in the Sweet 16. Is that failure is a bit extreme. Disappointment. I think there's what's that level of disappointment? And then same with Elite Eight. You get right to that doorstep of that Final Four and not able to punch through. Who'd they lose to in Megan's last year in the Elite Eight? Was it Baylor?
Baylor. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they had an elite team. They were really good. And, you know, their coach now is at LSU that everybody loves.
She's a sweetheart.
She's as nice as they get. So, I think the thing is, though, and we talked about legacy with the men's team, that this is the one thing kind of missing on Lisa's resume too, is a Final Four, is that statement, because she's the winningest coach in Big Ten history for women. She's the number four in all Big Ten history for wins, behind Gene Cady's third. And she's, you know, not that far away from him.
Did you see him at the Big Ten tournament yesterday? That was great.
Yeah, he's battling through some health issues.
I know. Like. I'm happy to see him.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite guys to cover in the Big Ten. Just the complete opposite 180 of the idiot that was in Bloomington.
Yes. Yes. Well, that was such a golden era, Rob, of coaches. You know, guys that I grew up watching. And that's, you know, not to switch back to men's, but man, you think back to the 80s and early 90s and stuff of they were just, that's the golden era of Big Ten basketball, when you had Lou Henson and the Robert Montgomery Knight, you know, and Gene Cady and Judd Heathcote and Tom Davis, and, you know, just some larger than life figures, and they all wore suits, and you know, Heathcote's talking about the ghosts in the old arena there, and you got Lou Henson wearing orange, and you know, and Bob Knight being Bob Knight, and you know, kind of Fran before Fran, right? You know, except he really carried it off the court too. But oh, it was Yeah, it's a shame. But going back to Lisa, I think that this is one where this is kind of a legacy defining season. You're a 2 seed that could have been a 1. You've won the Big Ten tournament for the second straight year. You've got an opportunity to kind of put that exclamation point on that resume as a probable Hall of Fame coach. I wrote about her last week, and this is the kind of the impact. But, you know, she's got such a wonderful personality that really relates so well with everybody. But this is the one thing missing. And I think if she can get to the Final Four, it would do wonders, not only for her program, but I think for the fan base right now, which, you know, we talked about with the men's fans, football's the same way, that I think this could be just kind of this feels good moment for the fan base.
Yeah, it would be great to have a nice run by both or at least one of these teams. And again, expectations are certainly different for each. I think the women, math in my head, combined the last 2 seasons heading into this tournament, 50-14. That's elite. That's among the best in the country. So really, you've established yourself as a factor. Now you have to go out and prove it in the tournament that matters the most.
Right. And, you know, what's fascinating is the second game will probably be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's an ABC game like last year. I mean, they got 1 million viewers for that second game against Creighton.
They could put that on Sunday at like 11 or noon, yeah. Like start the day with that.
Yep. That's what they did then. And so if it's, whether it's Florida State or Georgia, people will tune in. And with the men's tournament, the second day, you know, the round of 32 games, there's usually only about 1 game on early like that. They spread them out a little bit more than they used to.
Yep.
So this is, this could be, you could get another 1 million. And then if you're talking about the difference between Creighton and Iowa versus an SEC team in Iowa, the viewership will go up from there. It could be like 1.3 million, which again is just astounding.
Yeah, I would encourage people to check out Scott's article on Lisa Bluter from last week. It's a good read. We can finish up with this. If you published this today, but I first saw it today and haven't had a chance to read it yet. But your predictions for Iowa football players in the NFL draft, where they may head. I don't want to ruin that. I encourage people to buy the Athletic subscription. I own one. Enjoy. Really, I love Scott's work on there, but used a lot for fantasy baseball. Really good fantasy baseball writers. Eno is tremendous. Really good fantasy baseball writers at the Athletic. So if you're into fantasy sports, pro sports, whatever, it's got you covered. It's really well worth your money. And I encourage you guys to go check out Scott's NFL article. Anything you want to tease us with out of that thing?
Yeah, I looked at all these different, the scenarios for these players. And how I stacked it was I went through kind of the main mock drafts where they ended up, you know, who had who going where.
How much do those change from now into the draft? Now that the combine's over, are people pretty – are these the mock drafts, the will there not be much change between now and the draft?
Oh, the mock drafts will change a couple more times.
Because it's just, do they do that because they think that's what's going to happen, or do they do that to get people to come and look at the mock drafts?
I think it's a little of both.
Okay.
But I also think, you know, here's what some of them say, and I know them, so I know that they talked to somebody in the league who said this. Of course, it's okay. All lying season is what we know it as.
Right.
And so everybody's lying to each other and lying, especially to media, so that the false rumors get out there. But you know, from reading the tea leaves a little bit, and part of this was with the Chicago Bears trading down from number 1 to number 9 with the Carolina Panthers.
Were you good with that trade?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Getting DJ Moore, you know, along with, you know, 2 ones, 2 twos and DJ Moore. You know,
I'm sure he's happy the hell to be out of Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and being in Chicago, I mean, that's great. You know, and the thing was with the Bears, you look at the free agent market today, there aren't any really good receivers or top upper echelon. So this, and to trade somebody for, you know, they would have to give up a two. And even then for this team, they need all the draft picks, excuse me, that they can get. And so I think.
Is this a good receiver draft?
Not really. There's about two or three that I think are, you don't have a Jamar Chase. Let's put it that way. You know, we don't have anybody. And so getting their number one receiver and being able to still pick in the top 10, I think is really good this year. Plus getting an extra two this year, a number one next year. So, you know, I look at Lucas Van Ness going to Chicago.
With a nine.
Cause their defense was so pathetic last year, especially for a franchise that stakes its whole identity on toughness and defense. You know, it's one thing to not be good at quarterback because that's pretty much been par for the course, but defense, that's been what they've hung their hat on for, you know, 100 years. So they only had 20 sacks last year, and like Philadelphia had 70. So you got to make that up. And I'm sure they will with some free agency because they have a ton of money, but you're going to also need somebody. And looking at the way Lucas Van Ness performed, not only at the combine, but throughout his career, how he's in the trajectory that he's on, he makes perfect sense. And then you throw on, this is just an addition to it, but he grew up a Bears fan in Barrington, hometown guy, wants to be a Bear, plays like a Bear. You know, that's the kind of guy you want building your franchise around. So
Kevin Warren should be familiar with him.
Yeah, if he, yeah, who knows? they could use some. I'm glad he's going to the Bears. Let's put it that way. but no, I had him, and then of course I, you know, not to get too far out there, I had Jack Campbell and Sam Laporta go in the second round, and then Riley Moss in the top of the fourth. But I think he could be a third as well, and Kayvon going in the fifth. And Kayvon, you know, it's when you start to get into Kayvon territory, and I think he's still going to be, he could be a fourth or fifth or sixth rounder, just kind of depends on the team. But what I expect for him, and I had him going to Minnesota, and here's why. This was a bad defensive team. It was a good team overall, but a bad defensive side of the ball. It's cash strapped, has no salary cap money to speak of, and it doesn't have a lot of capital in the draft. It has like five draft picks. So what you need is somebody who maximizes your draft picks. There are times when Minnesota used to have like 15 draft picks. And so you just kind of waste it on a guy that, you know, okay, well, he was a five-star and never produced. And maybe he just was in a bad system, or this guy got in trouble. We'll just take a flyer. You can't afford to do that. And Kayvon, you know, is a safe player. You know, is the ceiling as high as some other players? I don't know. Probably not, but he's a guy that could come in and play for you right away, play special teams, be an asset in your locker room, and do everything you ask him to do in the right way, and probably play a lot for you, if nothing else, special teams. So that's why I had him. You know, those are some of the side factors that I think about when I start slotting guys, especially late in the draft. And I haven't put in the likely free agents, you know, John Wagoner, Seth Benson, or Monty Potabom. But you know, maybe after pro day next week, I'll start really examining.
Yeah. Those. We're a week from pro day, Iowa pro day, Scott. What are your kind of thoughts heading into that? Who's looking to help themselves there? Will the combine guys work out? Why don't you give people a little bit of insight in what they can expect next week? Cause I don't know if we'll have a podcast until after that pro day.
I wouldn't work out if I was any of them. I thought they all performed so well at the combine that they don't need to work out and, you know, improve their 40 time or whatever. I mean, in fact, I think if you went for the 40, that you can only subject yourself to maybe injury, you know, a tweaked hamstring or something like that. But it's all, as we know, it's always vital for those players who are, you know, who aren't going to be drafted. You know, how do they perform? What does John Wagoner show? What are the others show? And I think Seth Benson's going to be an interesting one because he played really well this year. And he's kind of like Jack Sanborn was last year, the Wisconsin linebacker who the Bears signed as a free agent. And then by midseason, he was playing well and he started. And he actually played pretty well for the Bears. I think Seth Benson's that kind of guy that he's going to go to a camp based on what he does, not only just workout wise, but how he talks to these scouts and stuff. It's going to be a real impact on him on getting in the right place. And then he'll have an opportunity to make a team. You know, John Wagner, I'm really fascinated with him because kind of like with Matt Nelson, I almost wonder if he'd be better off moving to the other side of the ball. You know, he reminded me a lot of Brian Madison, who did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, not as much Matt Kroll who did, but definitely Brian Madison, not as big as Matt Nelson, but I think he's a guy that if he flipped over to the other side of the ball and he got like a 2-year flyer on the practice team somewhere, could he, you know, become an offensive lineman? That's something to think about. And if that happens, then you go, damn, he should have been an offensive lineman at Iowa because they could have really used him there. Potterbaum will be, he'll be a, it's hard to say. I think he's a workout warrior. There are just so few teams that use fullbacks exclusively. But I think he's got a chance to sign as a free agent. And then if he performs well, you know, maybe make it. I mean, I'm sure some teams will look at his mullet and laugh, and other teams will go, man, that's the kind of guy we need.
Yeah, no doubt. It's and those guys will, what's good for the combine guys too, is they can meet with teams at pro day, maybe that they didn't get to in Indianapolis, maybe set up visits to these cities. So that's kind of the next phase, right? Where you kind of tie up, you know, the last stages here before they begin the selection process.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and again, the combine guys all got to meet with players, you know, even like Riley Moss and Kayvon Merriweather met with a lot of them in the Senior Bowl. So yeah. They got to see him practice. They got to see him perform in Indy. They don't really need to see him perform on the field. And probably maybe one or two teams might try to bring him in for a visit, but they've already kind of conducted their time with them. But it is so important for John Wagner, for Seth Benson, for Monty Potterbaum. And I don't know who's going to return, but a lot of times former players out of the league get that opportunity too. You know, one person that pops into my mind would be Davion Nixon, who got cut a couple of times last year from a couple of different teams, that this might be an opportunity for him to come and work out, talk to teams on campus, maybe a few others from the recent past that either didn't make it or, you know, our free agents can work out or just be there. And that's always helpful for them too. So I would expect a lot of conversation. It's a weird day for us in some ways, because it's always like, hey, show up around 12:30, 1 o'clock, and one person will trickle out. And then, but you know, the media has to respect that is a job interview day for them. And the athletes that, you know, this is an opportunity to talk to GMs, coaches, scouts, and really emphasize why they should be a part of that organization. So it's a fascinating day. And Iowa State does it the next day. So I'll probably be at both, you know. Iowa State actually lets you watch. So that's always cool.
Iowa used to do that years and years ago. Do some of the underclassmen, or I don't say underclassmen, but guys that aren't in this draft, do they participate in this at all?
I
thought I remember Noah Fant running 1 year before, but I could be wrong with that. My memory sucks.
I don't think so. I take that back. They can participate in certain ways. You know, Spencer Petras was throwing routes, I think it was last year, and now he can't do it this year, obviously, and I wouldn't expect Cade McNamara to do it either. So I don't know. Maybe
Joey Labus.
Yeah, could be Joey Labus, but they don't really have any receivers.
No, no. And I don't think LaPorta is going to be running routes.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he needs to. You know, maybe he'll, I don't even think he'll do anything, because what he ran, you know, I went through all the times for historical purposes. He was the third fastest in the 40 of any Iowa tight end ever. Just Fant and Kittle, you know, we're a little bit, he's like 4.59, and I think Kittle was 4.50, and or, I mean, Fant was, and then Kittle was like 4.52. So he did enough, you know, and there's no need to tweak your hamstring like Chad Greenway did and, you know, back in 2006.
Yeah, no need for any of that to happen. I guess that'll do it, folks. We got through an hour and a half or so of tournament preview. I appreciate you guys adjusting to our schedule this week. We probably will not be back until next week with the Hotspot podcast. But we have podcasts throughout the week. I'll be back tomorrow for the mailbag. If I didn't get to anything today, we can talk about it tomorrow on the mailbag. But we appreciate all of you folks for listening. Thank you so much to our sponsors. And we should be back regularly scheduled time tomorrow, but we could be at the mercy of what's going on in the NCAA tournament as well. So we will let you guys know. But until then, have a good rest of your week, and we will talk to you next week. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.